What does Issues Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. 618-223-8384. What does Issues Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
Kate and I have decided to separate.
Yes, we have decided that we will separate.
It's just not good for our kids for us to be arguing in front of our kids. We can't be cordial with one another, then we decide to separate.
I'm not very fond of the idea, personally, but I know it's necessary because my goal is peace for the kids. The kids will remain living in their house. I've always called this their house. I will remain here as well during my portion of having them. John will also come here when it is his days, and we will flip-flop that way.
Well, except for the rather unusual living arrangements, it's not the first time we've watched celebrities divorce or split up, even with kids involved. But for some reason, this strikes a nerve, John and Kate Gosselin separating and then announcing at least the beginning of divorce proceedings last night on television. And not only the fact that they have eight children, little kids, adorable little kids, in the balance here, but also to have watched this happen so slowly and painfully in the last several months, not only on television, but in the tabloids and the magazines, strikes a note for some reason, especially for people who are fans of this show and like the idea that a mother and father stay together when things are really hard, when you're raising eight kids, which is hard, hard stuff. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. It's June the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MY-IE. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll spend the first half talking about the separation of John and Kate Gosselin, and then we'll talk to Dr. Peter Scare about the birth of John the Baptist. Our first guest, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's authored the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
What I heard again and again last night from both John and Kate Gosselin as they were talking about their imminent separation was, we're doing this for the kids. What do you make of it?
Well, okay, first of all, Todd, I'm at a complete disadvantage here because, as you know, I don't watch TV. So you are just revealing how much time you spent watching TV, man, to tell us that you've been watching this again and again and hearing them talk like this. So let me do a little experiment here. Because I'm a complete media naif, and I know nothing about these people. And you guys, you and your listeners, you all have been watching them on TV for months now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So here's my guess about these people. First of all these kids are in vitro fertilization babies. Is that right?
I think the twins are, and I think six that followed afterwards, yes, are the result of in vitro fertilization.
The batch of them. Okay,
yes.
Yeah, because they don't naturally come in batches. So those are IVF. Do you know if it's the husband's sperm?
I have no idea.
We have no idea, and that was not discussed on the program.
I may have in the past, but
okay,
I have
okay.
no idea.
Okay, well, two things come to mind. First of all, I'm guessing that this woman is kind of bossy. And the reason I'm guessing that is that a lot of times what happens with IVF is that the woman absolutely has to have her way and has to have kids, and they have to be her kids, okay? And that little thought of mine is based on observing a lot of infertile women and talking with endocrinologists who work with a lot of infertile women. What the endocrinologist told me is that when you see women go through infertility, one of the things that they go one of two directions. Either they get very spiritual and let go, and understand they can't control everything and they just let go of things, or they become narcissistic and insist on having everything their own way. So I'm guessing we're looking at number two, the option two here with
you
this
have
lady.
You've not watched the show.
I've never watched the show.
Okay, well, as far as someone's been watching it for a couple of years now, You hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
And, how about that?
And in fact, one of the reasons that the husband, John, gave on the air last night for the dissolution of the marriage was, you know, I was too passive. I let her shove me around. Then I stood up on my own 2 feet. And now I'm proud of myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And she can't handle it.
Okay. So what about this we're doing this for the kids thing?
Well, that's baloney. This is obvious baloney. I mean, you don't break up a household for the sake of the children. The fact is that somebody needs to stop insisting on having their own way happen all the time. You know, and you know, I don't know what this woman wanted when she married this guy, or when she had kids with him. But it sounds like what she wants is an assistant mom, and not a dad. And I don't know. Am I close with that?
It's uncanny. Jeff and I are eyeing each other across the glass here. Both of us have watched this with our wives.
Uh-huh.
And you could be writing a review of the last several seasons.
Well, you know, in economics, we have this theory, you see, that you have a good theory if you can predict the outcome in advance without knowing. And so I would say I have a pretty good theory of human nature going here, huh?
I
hit it 2 out of 2 on this one.
I want to ask you about your thoughts, just as kind of basically an observer, not of television so much, but of marriage as the phenomenon in society that it is.
Yes.
When it's hard enough raising 8 kids, but these people had cameras in their house several days a week during times, putting the kids to bed, changing diapers, all this kind of stuff, and it was fascinating to watch. Can any relationship go unaffected by the media literally injected into your home?
Well, I think you put your finger on a very good point there. I would find it extremely uncanny, you know, to have to deal with that. And there would be times, I would have to say, when in my household, we would tell them to just get the heck out of there, you know. Or you would certainly want to tell them to get the heck out of there. I don't know what they're getting paid. But, you know, there'd be moments when you'd be saying, get out of my face. We don't want you here. And also, if you think about it, that's what dads should do. Dads should be protecting their family from intrusions and from people who would harm them or people who would, you know, invade them in different ways. And, you know, so this guy sacrificed his family's privacy for the sake of money, I suppose. And so there's something lost there, too. Are they going to go on with this? Are they going to continue this program?
There's a hiatus announced. At least they're suspending production for a while, and then they're promising new episodes in August. So,
yeah. Well, do you know what? I mean, I'm just going to go way out on a limb here and say, if this guy really wants to stand up for himself, what's his name? John something? Mm-hmm. John? Okay. If John really wants to, you know, stand up for himself and protect his family, he should put his foot down and say, this is the end of this program. We're not doing this anymore. This can't be good for the kids. And obviously what we're doing isn't good for our marriage. So I'm going to fight for my marriage. I'm going to be a man and fight for our marriage by somewhat fighting with you, Kate, but also with fighting with the rest of the world and just drawing a line in the sand and saying, no more. This is not good for us, and I declare a stop to it. And yes, we were making money from the show, but we can make money some other way. We just can't do this anymore. That's what I think he ought to do. And that's, you know, again, completely knowing nothing about the show. I think you have to be right, Todd, that having the cameras poking around while you're changing your baby's diapers, I mean, that's just got to put a lot of strain on everybody.
You talked about the husband. Instead of staying and saying, show's over, guys, show's over, dear, let's get our lives back on track, he's checking out, and he puts it in terms of standing up for himself.
Now, how do you mean he's checking out? I don't get that.
Well, not only is he moving out of the house and, you know, separating and divorcing eventually from his wife, but they're going to he's already got a girlfriend that he travels with and things like that.
Oh, so he's initiating this whole thing.
Well, that's impossible to tell. But what's happened is this is a guy who says, when it's time to celebrate my wife's birthday, I'm skiing in Nevada. They got the money. Now I can check out of my life whenever I want to. I can get on a plane and leave.
Wow.
And he says,
is that what he's been doing throughout the show?
Both of them have been doing a little bit of it because she's been pushing a book. But
wow.
But he's framing it in terms of finally standing up for myself.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate because the problem with this marriage, the problem with modern marriage, Todd, is that everybody's into it for themselves. See, and you can't be into marriage for yourself. That's a complete contradiction in terms. You know, that can't work. So as long as they're saying what's in it for me, of course they're going to get divorced. There's never enough in it for me to, you know, to put up with whatever you have to put up with, whether it be one child, no children, or just the other spouse, you know. The way you make it through married life is to look at it as this is a joint enterprise. This is a going concern. We have burnt the ships. There's no turning back. We're not leaving each other on the shore. We're both in this together. So now the question is, how can I help? What can I do to help? How can I make it better? Once you get reoriented and start thinking like that, then you have a chance of making things work. Then you have a chance of making it better. But as long as you're thinking, what's in it for me, you have no chance. And so this poor guy, you know, he's profoundly confused, and it's not hard to understand why, because the whole, you know, whole culture is profoundly confused. It'd be amazing if he wasn't. But I predict that this new girlfriend isn't going to make him happy, isn't going to fulfill him. The ski trips aren't going to make him happy. You know, it isn't enough. He's going to miss those kids. You know, they're going to start wetting the bed and, you know, getting grouchy and having fits. And, you know, stuff happens when kids are separated from their parents, you know.
Let's
and
talk
when
more on the
conflict.
Let's pick it up on the other side of the break. We're talking about the separation of John and Kate Gosselin of John and Kate Plus 8. I want to hear from you about this separation. 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943, our in-studio email address on this Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of June, talkshoesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is our guest, founder of the Ruth Institute, author of the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of June.
Rather than fix the problems, they never solve them. It makes no sense at all. I see them every day. We get along, so why can't they? If this is what he wants and it's what she wants, then why is there so much pain?
We're talking about the separation of John and Kate Gosselin. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is our guest. This is Issues Etc. Jennifer, as I'm watching this last night, I'm thinking to myself, this is exactly what Jen, I really literally thought this. This is what Jennifer talks about so often, marriage as a parent-centered institution rather than a child-centered institution. What's that distinction, why it's so important?
Well, the way you're describing this breakup, these people have entered into their married life with the question of, what does this do for me? And the kids are fine. They love their kids. I have no doubt that they love their kids. But they're oriented towards themselves and how it makes them feel. So it's about, you know, gee, this is so cool. We have all these kids. And the kids then become, you know, I hate to say this, but the kids become kind of like little consumer goods that they have acquired. I mean, these children were made, not begotten, so to speak. You know, your listeners say begotten, not made, right? You guys, you're Nicene Creed people, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, so you know this phrase, begotten, not made. So these kids were made, not begotten, you know? So they're kind of, they become kind of little consumer items. And while not doubting in the least that these parents love their kids, they're not oriented towards the good of their children in the way that they would be or that they should be if marriage were, as it ought to be, a child-centered institution. So, yes, that is what I mean, Todd. These guys are like poster children for it, huh? And a lot of people think that when we're talking about marriage being a child-centered institution rather than an adult-centered institution, that we're just trying to be mean to gay people or something, you know. But you can see here that the issue of same-sex marriage is really peripheral. It's really way down the pike, or way down the list, kind of the important priorities that we have for marriage and what marriage ought to be in the culture. And this is a good opportunity to say that the divorce culture has been extremely destructive to marriage and to the conception of what marriage ought to be within society. The reason we have marriage in society So we need an institution to protect the interests of children. That is, every child has parents, and every child has an interest in a stable relationship with both of those parents. And so marriage is the institution that adult society universally comes up with to attach children to their parents and the parents to one another so that they will cooperate with one another for the good of those kids. And when we step away from that model of what marriage is about, then we end up in a world where marriage is impermanent, and marriage is really more focused on the adults and what it does to me and how I feel, rather than thinking about the kids and what's really ultimately in their interest.
Before no-fault divorce, what was the rationale in making it difficult to dissolve a marriage? What was the rationale with vis-a-vis children?
Yeah, well, the rationale, you know, I don't know how far back you want to go into the common law or all the way back to the Garden of Eden. You know, we could go back a long way here, but I mean, I think the basic rationale is that creating a child is the ultimate in team production. You know, I'm talking like an economist here. I don't suppose that's in Genesis. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? This takes one man and one woman, and they need to cooperate over the lifetime of this child. And not only over the lifetime of the child while the child's a little baby or something and really dependent, but then once the child has grown up, you don't get to just walk away because you're going to have grandchildren in common now. This child is going to, your adult child will have kids of their own. And so what you're really doing is not producing something and consuming something. You're creating a family. You're creating continuity through the generations. And so the rationale for permanence, you know, just at the practical level, is that the reality is that the fruit of your union is a permanent fruit, namely another person, and the other person's lifespan, but also their immortal soul. And of course, if we look at Genesis, and then we look then again at Matthew, where Jesus elevates the marriage to the level of permanence and says, look, you guys, you know, we know Mosaic law. Of course, Moses allowed you to get divorced, but that was because of the hardness of your hearts. That was not what God intended from the beginning, and he takes them right back to Genesis, you know, and basically tries to straighten people out and say, look, you know, God always intended this to be a permanent union of love, and you guys are just messing around, and it's time to get over that. And if we think it's hard for us today to live together for a lifetime, look at those apostles and how they reacted. They thought Jesus had lost his mind when he said that. They, you know, they're all, you can kind of hear him mumbling in the background, this is way too hard, we can't do that, what are you talking about, you know? So obviously, the business of lifelong love has always been difficult. It didn't just become difficult the day before yesterday. It was difficult all the way back at the time of Moses. So that suggests to us that it's not something in economics and politics in the 21st century. It has to do with the human condition, I think, and it has to do with our tendency to selfishness and our tendency to want to be self-centered and to have our own way happen all the time, which is what John and Kate were dealing with, you know, that everybody wants their own way. And marriage is meant to draw us out of that. It's meant to teach us to consider the good of the other and to take joy in considering the good of the other, to take pleasure in seeing our partner thrive and in seeing our children thrive. That's what marriage is supposed to do. It's supposed to be a school for love. And in that way, it's simply an inkling or a hint of the divine love and of the ultimate love that is going to await us on the other side of the grave. This is what our hearts are meant for. And this is why the culture of divorce and remarriage turns out not to make people happy. You know, most people who get divorced aren't really that much happier in the end, you know. Whereas people who have rough times in their marriage and they work it out, 5 years later, most of them are happier. And they'll tell you they're happier. That's been surveyed. That evidence is there. So that's the kind of stuff we try to talk about at the Ruth Institute, Todd, because we want the young people to know going into married life that this is normal, that you're going to hit rough spots, but that love is worth the effort. I mean, if I had to say one message of the Ruth Institute, one message of Dr. Morse, it would be love is worth the effort. And poor John and Kate, you know, they need somebody to tell them that. I you know, maybe we should, all your listeners should go online and send John and Kate an email telling them love is worth the effort. You guys don't give up. I don't know if it's probably too late. Their publicist probably won't let them back out now. But But honestly, I think that's the message. And if you're facing people in your lives who are ready to throw in the towel, you want to try to convey that to them wherever you can.
Two quick emails and quick responses, Jen. Deborah in Dallas. This program is a good example of how the spirit of darkness continually infects our society. I never watch these programs. They're exploitive, invasive, and really quite tragic. I can't judge these parents, but they must either be very ignorant or simply more concerned about the money and the show and the money that the show brings them than about the welfare not only of their marriage but of their children. Situations like these break my heart and make me pray, come, Lord Jesus. Your thoughts very briefly on that email from Deborah.
Well, I understand what she's talking about, you know, without having seen the show. It's tough to judge their motives, but it's for sure these people are wandering around in the dark without a clue, and that's why people need issues, et cetera, to bring some light into their lives.
Lou Ann emails us as well, says, I think the caller last week about not belittling a spouse in front of the kids has a lot to do with this situation. Actually, it's something even a single person noted as I watched the program a long time ago. That's Lou Ann, your very briefest response.
Oh, well, I don't know if that – does that go on that program? Do they belittle one another in front of the kids? I mean, there's never a good time to belittle your spouse. I mean, honestly, if you have a disagreement with them, you should be able to handle it like an adult and without making fun of them or putting them down and stuff. I talk about that in my little tips booklet, 101 Tips for a Happier Marriage. That thing's been circulating around for several years, and a lot of people have gotten a lot of benefit out of that. But that's one of my favorite tips, is that there's never a good time to be sarcastic. There's never a good time to belittle your spouse. And, you know, if you treated your spouse with the same courtesy that you would treat your employer or an important person who came to your home, you know, I think a lot of homes would be a lot happier, you know, that we simply aren't even courteous sometimes to our spouses. So the caller's right on, or the emailer is right on, in my opinion.
Folks, you'll find a link to Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse and the Ruth Institute under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Thank you very much, Jen.
You're very welcome.
When we come back from this break, we're going to be observing what the church observes tomorrow, the Nativity of John the Baptist. It's a miracle story. Now, compared to the virgin birth that follows it in the Gospel of Luke, it seems not so miraculous, but it certainly is. And it's very Old Testamental, the birth of John the Baptist, which is probably fitting because John the Baptist tends to stand with one foot in the old and one foot in the new, rightly so, being the forerunner of Christ. When we come back, we'll talk about the birth of John the Baptist. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. Look, it's sad whenever it happens, and it's a tragedy whenever it happens. And it is a failure. All marriages fail. I've said it before. All marriages fail. But that doesn't mean all marriages end. My marriage fails. It fails on a daily basis because I'm a sinner, and she's a sinner, and we fail one another, and we fail our God. The answer to failure is not, let's call it quits. The answer to failure is forgiveness. That's what I saw last night, not a single syllable. Maybe they edited it out, the forgiveness part. The best I heard was, you know, I don't hate the other person. I don't hate John, I don't hate Kate. But the saddest part is not that the marriage is failing, because marriages do fail, or that the marriage is ending, but that there, at least at this point, is no forgiveness. And what those children see is not only mom and dad going their separate ways, but they see, or they failed to see, forgiveness that should be there. When we come back, we'll talk about John the Baptist. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest.